In the Russian fortress city of Norikov, in the northern section of what had once been Pennsylvania, tired workers, the American slave laborers of the Reds, roused themselves for yet another day of backbreaking work. They were worked 6 days a week, 16 hours a day, and were allowed to rest on the seventh only because medical staff said that their bodies would fail from a seven-day week. Had they been able to choose, most slaves would have opted for the seven-day week so as to die quickly. But their minds didn't work that way. Born into slavery, living their lives in slavery, the American laborists were too unaccustomed to free choice to even conceive of suicide. At the very back of the half-mile-square American sector, pushed right up against the 50-foot-high steel wall that surrounded the entire fortress, a group of 21 workers slowly came out of their tortured dreams. James 25 was the first to rise from the cold concrete. There was no need to put on his clothes, as he had never taken them off. If one took off one's clothes, they might well disintegrate or be stolen. James 25 was tall and quite skinny, but strong, with long sinewy arms that possessed a strength far beyond his appearance. He carried a straight razor in his worn boot and was quite proficient in its use. He walked over to a hole in the floor where water collected from some sort of leakage from an ancient water pipe built over 100 years ago that ran beneath the sector. James 25 splashed the refreshing water over his greasy, stubbly face. Each man shifted in his little chalked-in rectangle, and slowly they rose to a sitting position, and then upright. The rest of the men finished slapping water on their deeply lined faces. Though hardly a one was over 35, they all looked to be in their 50s. Life expectancy for American laborers in one of the Red Fortresses was 42 years, although these statistics were hardly given to those whom they affected. The 21 workers left their dismal concrete home and headed down their muddy street toward the main highway through their part of the fortress, nothing more than a bulldozer-flattened stretch of gravel and tar. It was the one bit of building the Reds had done in the American sector, in case they had to bring large vehicles inside. James 25 joined the thousands of streaming workers walking quickly down the main thoroughfare into the factory sector of the fortress city. Here, immense concrete windowless buildings poured out billows of smoke as they geared up for another day of production of goods to be shipped back to Mother Russia. James 25 passed through the electrified gate that separated the American from the factory sector. Red guards with automatic rifles stood atop concrete bunkers and walls on both sides of the entrance, keeping a cold eye on the workers. The constant show of force and weaponry were usually enough intimidation to keep the Americans in line. Usually. As he headed toward his factory, a canning complex for the various agricultural products that were grown in strictly run communal farms for several miles around the fortress, James 25 saw an army truck filled with prisoners drive by. A not unusual sight, as the Reds were always rounding up stray Americans to be put into the factories or farms, or high-rad rock breaking. Occasionally, it was said, they'd even catch a free fighter. Free fighter. James 25 had heard of them for years. Did they really exist? What would it be like to be, his mind grappled with the word and the concept, free? Suddenly a man jumped out of the truck, an American, not a Red. He was dressed in good clean clothes, without holes. He looked proud and strong and terrified. He rolled as he hit the dirt and came up firing back inside the truck. A Russian guard jumped out. The Red tumbled to the ground, his face a bloody stew. The escaped prisoner ran toward the lines of workers heading toward the factory, but they all ignored him and jumped out of the way so as to not be mowed down by the Red fire that they knew would shortly be coming. James 25 watched as if it were all a dream. Everything seemed to be in slow motion. James 25 suddenly realized the man was running straight for him.
You won't get me alive!
The man had been shot in the hip. He crawled over to the empty garbage cart that James 25 ducked behind.
Hey, buddy.
Me?
Yeah. Don't let them take me, pal. I'm a free fighter. You know who we are. We're fighting to free all of you. Help me, man. I can't let them take me.
There is no help. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. There's nothing in life except work and death.
I see it's a real cheerful place around here. I'll have to have my next vacation here.
The Foo Fighter's arm was spurting blood. With great effort, he loosely held his .45.
Listen, buddy. Do me a favor. Shoot me. I know you don't know what's going on out there. But if the Reds get me, a meeting that I was heading for, a meeting that could mean the end of Russian control of our country, could be destroyed. Do you understand? Shoot me now. I can't let them catch me.
James 25 looked at the pistol. The Red guards were closing in now, and he could see that they wanted to get the man alive. He knew what they'd do to him. He'd heard the prisoners taken to the Mindbreaker building, even though it was half a mile away.
Americans. We're Americans.
James 25 smiled for the first time in 25 years.
Give me the pistol.
Here you go, buddy. You've done a great thing for America today.
The Reds were closing in on James 25 now. He stood up from the body and walked toward them. He thought of the slime hole he lived in. He thought of the factories. He thought of the Free Fighter he had just killed. How the man had acted, even in the very jaws of death. A man. To be a man. To die a man. He stood, pistol in hand. The smile on James 25's face grew wider with each shot. It took 15 red slugs to finally put him away.
Order! Order! As president of this council, I demand order! Now, I know we're all excited about our agenda today, but that is no excuse to ignore regular proceedings. Now, let us begin.
Council President Willis raised his hand across his heart and turned toward the flag that hung on the wall behind him. The American flag. The true American flag. Not the Russian version, which had ripped out the stars and substituted a hammer and sickle. The flag, wounded but still alive, and the very symbol behind which the hidden cities gathered their strength.
We pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the past glory and the ideals for which it stands. 100 free cities under God with liberty and justice for all Native Americans.
Roxanne came in just as they were finishing. He threw his hand quickly over his heart as Rona came in breathlessly a few steps behind him. They had spent a peculiar night together in Rona's elaborately feminine and sensual bedroom. The two of them had been lovers for years. She, beautiful, 5'10", a red-haired wildcat that could allow no man to tame her, except Ted Roxon. Rona, though she disguised her affections with wisecracks and emotional barriers, was hopelessly in love with the Doomsday Warrior. But Rock had never truly returned the favor. Not since Kim Langford, anyway.
Now, everyone knows this is a momentous occasion. As meaningful as that day, centuries ago, in 1776, when men just like us vowed to overthrow their oppressor. Now, a new convention is being called. A reconstitutional convention, at which a new America will be born. With organization across the country, and a new president and Congress to lead us, with generals and synchronized attacks, our country has its first real chance in over 100 years of blood and pain to win back its precious homeland.
Rona glanced over at Rock, who stood several feet away, his eyes intent on the council president. She felt a confused mixture of anger and desire. She had felt his coldness during the night, even as their bodies merged and undulated in the most supreme of mortal pleasures, she had felt his distance. What could have changed? Could there be another woman? Here? In Century City? She'd like to find out who. She'd rip the bitch's hair from her cheating head. Rona's eyes glowed violently as her fantasy of betrayal played before her. Willis's voice began growing a little raspy. His age was beginning to show. At 84, even the fieriest of orators was beginning to lose a little steam. He had been around in the days when CC was just a big hole in the ground. But even the strong must grow old. Willis leaned forward on the dais, resting himself from the emotional exertion of the night. He paused dramatically and reached inside his jacket, pulling out a white envelope, which he held up in front of the audience.
I will now read the letter I received from Charles Langford. 50 years ago, the rule of the greatest tyranny of one state over another began in an atomic day of infamy.
Never were so many enslaved to benefit so few. Never did a nation so high fall so low so quickly. A reign began that, according to the conqueror, is to last for 10,000 years. But far worse than the physical ruination and the mutations was the decline of the American soul. When the spirit rots, so the man must soon wither away. But still brave bands of Americans fought on, not willing to give their minds and souls to the red grinding menace. All over America, underground rebel groups clung together, first for survival, then for attack, and at last for vengeance. But still we are alone, like small islands in a sea of blood, unable to come together. Gentlemen, ladies who are reading this letter, I say unto you, a house divided cannot stand. The day of reckoning is at hand. It is now within our power to fight back and win. The land has not changed. It is still ours. It cries out every morning, every night, as the sun passes overhead and looks down in tears. It cries out for the invader to be tossed out like so much rubbish onto the bonfire of history. Let the enemy, the Red Empire, feel the flames of our will. Let its skin begin to peel and blister from these words. These are the new days. Days of the free fighter. Days of a resurrected America. There are now over 100 free fighting towns or cities in our country. Most of you only know the location of 4 or 5 of those closest to you. And so far, this has been a necessity to avoid total destruction by the Reds. But a new day must begin. A day when we no longer hide, but can walk in our own valleys and climb our own mountains without fear of death. A day of cooperation with one another, of government, of a military council that can direct coordinated strikes against the enemy. It is through this combined strength, through the use of all our minds and bodies, that we will be victorious. I implore you, my fellow Americans, do not take this letter lightly. I know that there are grave risks involved for you to come to this convention. Death itself. But you must all come. Every single free-fighting city must be represented for this new regeneration to take place. I have spent my life working toward this day. It is the fruition of my dream to see you all gathered together, to share our experiences and our strengths. It is not for myself that I wish this. I am running to be the first president of the reunited states, but if I am not elected, if all I have succeeded in doing is gathering you all to begin anew, then I could die a happy man. The date of the convention is September 12th of this year. The location is secret, known only to the elected leader of your city or town. He will reveal it to those chosen. I wait for you, men and women of America. God willing, every one of you will arrive safely, and we can set to work on the long, hard task that awaits us.
Good luck, and God be with you. Signed, Charles L. Langford. I think the letter pretty much speaks for itself. The only question then is, just which 4 citizens of Century City will be the ones to go?
The air was filled with an electric tension as the entire audience, now nearly 500 people jamming every aisle, hanging out of the doors of the wide oval-shaped council chamber, looked at one another.
Tina Williamson!
Oh, hold up, hold on! Slow down now! We must decide this in a calm and orderly manner. First, there will be nominations, then seconds, then voting. We will assume that those of you who are here are enough of a representation of Century City to make the voting legal.
It was true. It did seem like the whole spectrum of humanity was there. Fighting men, cooks from the Great Kitchen, engineers with their pencil-marked smocks, and working men, jeans and flannels soaked in grease and oil. The melting pot of America lived on, a stew of colors and names and accents and dress. Here, people could still be unique and individualistic, and this was the greatest freedom of all. For the next hour, over 100 names were nominated, including Roxon and most of his team, Detroit Green, Master Chen, McCaughlin, even Archer, the 7-foot-tall taciturn giant. When the nominating process had finally been completed, Willis started the voting procedure, but a voice suddenly piped out from the crowd.
I think I should say one thing.
A somber shape moved slowly down the middle aisle, and the crowd parted like the Red Sea. It was Rath, head of intelligence. The man had the vaguest resemblance to a weasel, with his long hair, angular face, and small mouth that seemed to suck each word back in as he spoke it, as if he might be revealing something top secret. But as one of the 5 most important men in the place, his authority to speak at any point was unquestioned. Rath smiled wanly to Willis and addressed the crowd.
My fellow citizens, it is well and good for you to pick your favorite to go on this crucially important venture. Who you think is the brightest, the freest, the best looking. But I must remind you of one thing. It is hell out there. A living hell. I think you all know that, but somehow, in the midst of all this democratic enthusiasm, you seem to have forgotten it. Well, I'm here to remind you again. This is not some little trek out a few miles to gather meat or wood. This isn't even an attack on a red convoy 50, 100 miles away, then tear ass back to CC through the brush. No, we're talking 1,000 miles or more. Most of you don't even really know what it's like out there. In our locale, we're not doing too badly. There are forests, brooks, wildlife all around us. But once you get into some of the heavier nuke zones to the north, I assure you, things are quite different. And quite horrible. There are creatures out there you haven't seen in your darkest nightmares. Deserts, swamps of the foulest putrescence, stretching for hundreds of miles, with fungus and spores that literally attack and consume human flesh. There are... But need I go on? I fear that once again, some of you will think that I am over-exaggerating. Roxon, I ask you as a man who has traveled throughout this ravaged land, are my words true or not?
I'm afraid every word is true. It's no picnic out there. Only the toughest of you could survive.
Rath looked out over the audience with a thin smirk.
My point is just this. It's well and good to have delegates who are truly representative of CC. Women, youth, scholars, technical staff. But they'd be appetizers for some of our hungry American creatures who roam the wastelands.